This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is the Scala Report with Chris Riegel, CEO of Scala.com, a global technology firm transforming the retail space to China. Reopening is the metaphor. China is reopening after COVID zero and other bad decisions by the Chinese Communist Party. But is it? We have discord. Wall Street Journal is reporting that trade between the U.S. and China and the world is reaching pre-pandemic levels, if not already exceeding them, not adjusted for inflation. At the same time, there's reporting that the Baltic Dry Index, that's ships at sea carrying cargo of all kinds, is down dramatically. So which is it? Chris, a very good day to you. Anecdote from the mainland suggests that there is high unemployment, especially in the big factories that have been producing goods for the U.S. At the same time, the real estate bubble that burst has not been repaired. At the same time, the party is either making friendly gestures towards the world, inviting investors to come back in, or, because of the balloon incident, is demonstrating a level of paranoia that we could only assume before. The party is now acting persecuted. So what are your measures of what is going on in this reopening? Is it business as usual and will rebuild, or is there something of despair about it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, China post Chinese New Year at the electronics factory side is coming back post the holiday in a productive way. However, the demand for their factories is way down. You're seeing across the board in China, in the electronics and some of the tech industry, dramatically lower demands. You see that with the earnings of companies like Samsung that are noticeably down on semiconductor and smartphone. So there's a glut in semiconductor at the moment. There are reduced buys from consumers of consumer electronics because of the recession that's ongoing. And then you're seeing just in general volume, to your index point, roughly one third fewer containers leaving China on a daily basis. So even though the Chinese government may publish statistics to say everything's good here, nothing to see, the point that cargo volume is down by a third would lead the rational observer to believe there may be a problem.
Chips. The U.S. has moved very effectively these last weeks to make announcements about how the high-end chips are not any longer available to China or the tools that make the high-end chips. This has to do with agreements in Europe and in Japan. At the same time, the U.S. is looking to anticipate a cutoff or a damage to chip-making high-end if and when there's an attack on Taiwan. Do you see evidence in China that the chip shortage or the chip embargo, the high-end chip embargo, is going to inhibit or has already inhibited the reopening?
So, John, the Biden administration, starting in October, took a series of steps and continues to move forward with eliminating or dramatically reducing the Chinese domestic ability to build advanced chips. So the U.S. has gotten together with a number of allies, the Japanese, Koreans, the Dutch, and others, and said, anything that is what would be considered a modern process under 28 nanometers, those tools are banned from going into China. You cannot support those efforts in China, and either you work with China or you work with the U.S., but you cannot work with both. So that's been an extremely aggressive move by the Biden administration to really stunt the Chinese chip industry. In parallel, you're now seeing in South China Morning Post and in People's Daily a series of really aggressive articles talking about how the Chinese market could fall 20 years behind the rest of the world in chip development, and also bemoaning U.S. technical hegemony from our imperialist mentality. So you're seeing a lot of bemoaning and saber rattling that says, hey, this is a real problem for the Chinese.
The happy news of Intel looking to develop a manufacturing, a fab in Ohio, and there are other states that also have happy news about developing fabs. Is all that going forward, Chris, or was that just talk?
I think it's absolutely going forward. If we've learned anything in the last 3 years, the message has been very clearly U.S. tech has to decouple from dependence on China as a supply chain, number one. Number two, unless we can reshore some of these, especially more advanced node processes here in the U.S. is at a technical and strategic deficit should there ever be greater world conflict if all of our chips are cut off from Asian supply.
The recovery from the pandemic. The new buzzword I love on Wall Street, along with rolling recession, is temporary deflation. What it means is, while there's a move for inflation to retreat in some fashion, and we can see it already, it's actually just temporary deflation, matching the temporary inflation that was used as an explanation in 21. It's sharp. It has to do with traders and their posture. But at the same time, do you see it? Do you see deflation in prices anywhere or deflation in B2B anywhere reducing? And do you expect it to reemerge as inflation later, which is what Wall Street's pointing to?
Yeah, we're not seeing deflation in most of the categories that we deal with and track. What we're seeing now is this pressure on labor, where labor is expensive. So you're seeing many, many companies across tech sector and others continuing to downsize the labor force. So the pricing of labor continues to be high, but companies are dramatically reducing the amount of people on their payrolls to try to offset that high price, which they had to bear through the pandemic, but now maybe not so much.
I knew you were the man to come to because of that surprise number reported to Wall Street about more than 500,000 jobs added in January. It has not matched up with the expectations nor with the experiences of people I've talked to over these last days and continues to puzzle everybody, especially because the big category was leisure and hospitality, a sector you know well, B2B. That is what you do or watch very carefully. Do you see hiring at that scale, the biggest category in the 500,000 plus?
Generally, no. But when you are seeing hiring, it's people that are having trouble making ends meet and taking on second and or third jobs. So the question, as has been interesting the last several years, is how you define words. If this job is a second job, a third job, if you're working on gig economy of Uber or other, is that a full job or not? How does that get counted in labor statistics? There's still pressure to get employees into that sector. But you saw just yesterday, Disney announced 7,000 layoffs within their company, and they're square in that leisure and hospitality area. The pressures are mounting as the consumer is running out of cash.
Yes, I've told the story of my visit to Washington about how the Hilton chain, which is tip-top when it comes to service, was short, obviously short, with no room service, limited kitchen, and the housekeeping was overtaxed because there are not enough of them to keep the hotel, which wasn't full in any event. Do you see, and you said you saw similar things across the country, do you see this improving with this hiring number? Is it getting better? Or do they have robots that take up the slack? What is actually happening with this leisure and hospitality number?
The challenge really is now trying to find and maintain people in the workforce. I think that the pandemic put several additional million people out of the mentality of being productive citizens and working. And you're still seeing, while labor is easing, it's still a bit tight compared to pre-pandemic. Rates are up, but trying to find people that want to work, that honest days work, honest days pay, is increasingly difficult.
The State of the Union message, much of it having to do with the domestic economy, jobs are up, inflation is down, all accurate given the levels we started at. The detail that troubled our European allies was the protectionism part about buy America or make in America when it comes to the Inflation Reduction Act, which is seen as green subsidization here in the U.S., quite opposite of what you would call globalization, where you go to the country that makes the best product the cheapest. The green protectionism has irritated our allies. Do you see in your European businesses a hesitation to deal with America because of this? Is there a sense of we need to retaliate because the Americans are taking advantage of us?
No, the Europeans will bellyache and call it protectionism, but they do far worse to our industries. So it's simply much ado about nothing. Will they take any action from it? No.
What you mean is their car companies take advantage of us all the time and we let it happen.
And absolutely.
And the State of the Union message, looking to possibly a campaign. We don't know whether the president's going to run for re-election or not. However, looking to the near future, did you see that the State of the Union message had any import for what you're doing, which is rebuilding after the pandemic? Was there something in there that you're looking to the Washington to accomplish?
I think I and most businesses across the country try to focus on how to improve the businesses without Washington as much as possible, such that the U.S. is at least now taking a much more open view towards the chip wars, towards the global competitive races that we're in many areas of technology and other. It seems at least that Washington is becoming wiser in their view of the opposing forces that we all face.
Chris Riegel is the CEO of Scala.com, a global technology firm, all continents except for the frozen one to the south. To my knowledge, a global technology firm using the digital technology to transform the retail space. This is the Scala Report. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
Alex is just...
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.